Friends, heartiest welcome to this session on Goods and Service Tax. My name is Pramod Jain. I am going to facilitate this session on Goods and Service Tax. We have divided the entire subject in five different phases. Each phase is going to be of about 1 hour. Before we start, let me give you a small introduction about myself. I worked in the industry as CFO and company secretary for 20 years with multinationals and Indian companies. After that, I changed my gear and got into teaching and training. And that is where I worked with ArcelorMittal, which is world's largest steel and mining company. I have delivered my training programs all over the globe in more than 50 locations on a wide range of topics. I have also authored 2 books, Finance for Value Creation and You Are a Board Winner. Currently, I am practicing as a valuation professional and also as an independent director, being on the board of NSE and BSE listed company. So with this brief introduction, let us begin our session on Introduction to Goods and Service Tax, that is GST. We now start with basic introduction about the GST, Goods and Service Tax Act. Primarily, tax payment is a duty of every responsible citizen, because as citizens, we avail so many facilities which are rendered by the government, and therefore it is our responsibility to pay tax. Taxes, as we all know, are the major sources of government revenue. The government has to administer the country, and therefore they need revenue, and therefore taxes are one of the major sources for the governments to collect revenue. Now, these funds are used for development and public welfare. Friends, India has a structured taxation system. So when I say India has a structured taxation system, now what does it mean? It simply means that in India, the central government collects taxes, the state government collects taxes, and so also the municipalities also collect taxes. And that is how we have a structured taxation system in this country. Now, these taxes are broadly classified into 2 categories. So one is referred as the direct tax and the other is referred as the indirect tax. Let us understand what are the direct tax and what are the indirect tax. Direct tax, as the name suggests, are the taxes which are collected directly from the citizen, from the person, from the individual. Indirect taxes, on the other hand, are not collected directly from the person. They are collected indirectly from the person. So let us look at the examples of direct taxes. So when we talk about direct taxes, so you have income tax, which is a central tax, which is a direct tax. You also have agriculture income tax. The only thing we must know here that in our country, agriculture income tax is not collected by the central government. Agriculture income tax is collected only by the state governments, and that too, there are only 3 states that collect income tax through the agriculture income, and that is Assam, West Bengal, and Kerala. And then we also have professional tax, which is again a direct tax collected by the state. Under the indirect tax, which is the second category, the first one is goods and service tax, which is the focal point for our session today. And the GST is divided into 2. So one is the GST collected by the central government, and the second is the GST collected by the state and the union territories. Then under the indirect tax, you also have the custom duty, which of course is collected only by the central government and which is collected on the goods imported in this country. The third example of indirect tax is octroi, and we all are aware. Now, incidentally, the octroi, which earlier was there, has been largely subsumed into the GST Act. And therefore, even though octroi has been a form of indirect tax, but currently it is not enforced. And fourthly, we had entertainment and amusement tax, which again was collected by the states. And again, friends, the entertainment tax also has got subsumed into the GST. And therefore, income tax, therefore, the entertainment tax and the amusement tax is also not enforced today. Let us move further and understand the meaning and the administration of the direct tax. Direct tax is paid directly to the government. So income tax, as we all know, is a tax which is a direct tax, and it is directly paid by the individual or by the corporate to the government. So direct tax is paid directly to the government. Incidence and impact fall on the same person of the direct tax. The tax liability cannot be transferred. So unlike in case of indirect tax, as we will see as we move forward, the tax liability of the direct tax cannot be transferred to anyone. The tax liability of the indirect tax is transferred finally to the end consumer, which is not the case as far as the direct tax is concerned. It is paid by the individuals or the organizations on income and wealth. So as we all know, income tax is a tax which is collected from the individuals or from the business entities. When it is business entities, it is referred as corporate tax because it is the tax which is getting collected from the corporates. So it is paid by the individuals or the organizations on their income. The administration of the direct taxes in our country is done by Central Board of Direct Taxes, CBDT, and CBDT functions under the Department of Revenue, which is within the Ministry of Finance. Let us now talk about types of direct taxes. So the first is income tax, which is levied on income earned in a financial year. And when I say financial year, that means it is from April to March. It is imposed by the central government. As we discussed little while ago, we also have agricultural income tax, which is again a direct tax levied by the state governments. But remember, not by all the state governments in this country. There are only three states currently charge agriculture income, which is Assam, Kerala, and West Bengal. Agriculture income, as far as the central government is concerned, it is completely exempt. Though for the purpose of arriving the income tax liability of a person who is also having agricultural income, the income is added to the agricultural income is added to his income only to arrive at the correct tax slab for him. Then we have the professional tax, which of course is levied by the state government, and the professional tax is levied by the state governments and applied on professions, trade, and employment income. So what are the advantages of direct taxes? So first of all, remember, the direct tax promotes equality. Rich pay more, poor pay less. So the direct tax or the income tax that we have in our country, the slabs more so for the individuals are structured in a way that higher the income, higher the slab. Lower the income, lower the slab. And therefore, the direct tax promotes equality as rich pay more, poor pay less. It is based on ability to pay principle. And therefore, in our country today, income for individuals up to 12 lakhs per annum is exempt from the income tax. And the principle is based on ability to pay. It is collected at source, that is low collection cost. So the income tax is collected in case of, let's say, employees by the employers in the form of TDS. And therefore, the government is getting the revenue directly through the employers, and the taxes are getting paid by the employers to the government. And therefore, in case of direct tax, there is a low collection cost. It minimizes corruption in the collection because the collection of the tax is happening directly. And therefore, there is a less possibility of any kind of corruption happening. It is an important source of government revenue. To share it with you, about 25 to 30% of the revenue that the government would collect from the taxes, it comes from 25 to 30% comes from the income tax, and it ensures social justice in taxation, and that is because rich pay more and poor pay less. What are the disadvantages of the direct taxes? Of course, there are certain disadvantages also of the direct taxes. Number one, possibility of tax evasion. That is by filing false return. Of course, this situation today is undergoing a dramatic change because of the digitalization that is happening, and because of the advent of artificial intelligence, the possibility for people to file false return is diminishing. And I'm sure the way things are progressing in the administration of the tax in this country, a day is going to be not very far where it would be impossible for anyone to file false return and evade tax. The second disadvantage of the direct taxes is complex procedure and formalities. I am sure all of you would be paying income tax and would be filing income tax return every year. And therefore, you would know how complex and difficult it is for a normal person who is not a tax expert to file his income tax return. So anyone and everyone who has to pay tax has to file the return. He has to take help of the professional, and that is because this current system is very complex and there are many formalities that need to be completed. It of course is an inconvenience to the taxpayer, no doubt about it. It may discourage investment, burden limited to high income group, which of course in a way is an advantage because it ensures social justice or social equity, and revenue collection may be limited in poor economies. Another disadvantage of the direct tax is the revenue collection may be limited in poor countries. That means the poor countries, because the large part of the population is poor, they do not have any income, and therefore they may not really be paying any taxes. Indirect tax, meaning and administration. Our focus in this session is on GST. GST, of course, is an indirect tax. So when I say indirect tax, what does it mean? As I have mentioned earlier, indirect tax means it is a tax which is collected by the government from the end user, but not directly, rather through the intermediaries. So indirect tax is paid to government through an intermediary. Let's say, for example, GST is a tax which is paid by the end user, but it is collected from the end user through all the intermediaries which are there, from the manufacturer of the product to the end user of the product, or from the provider of the service to the end user of the service. So indirect tax paid to government through an intermediary. Incidence and impact fall on different persons. It is collected by sellers, paid by consumers. So the sellers would collect. So the manufacturer, distributor, wholesale dealer, retailer. Now, all these people are the intermediaries in the entire value chain. So all of them will keep on collecting GST from the customer. And finally, the end user will pay the amount of the GST. Example, tax deducted in price of goods and service. GST is administered by Central Board of Indirect Tax and Customs, CBIC, and it was earlier known as CBIE. So today it is known as Central Board of Direct Taxes and Customs. Earlier it was known as CBIE, and E would stand for excise duty. CBIC, as in case of CBDT, is also is under the Department of Revenue and Ministry of Finance. What are the types of indirect taxes? First and foremost, and the biggest of all, is the goods and service tax. So goods and service tax, as the name suggests, it is levied on the sale of the goods and the provision of the services. Another indirect tax is basic customs duty. So remember, earlier there were two other customs duty, that is countervailing custom duty, that is known as CVD, or SAD, special additional duty. Now CVD and SAD both now have been subsumed in the GST, and now there is only one custom duty, that is BCD, that is basic customs duty. Octroi tax, now abolished, subsumed into the GST. Entertainment tax, now subsumed into the GST. Levied on goods and services consumption. So as I mentioned already, GST is levied on the sale of goods and provisions of the services, and it is paid directly by the final consumer. So it is the final consumer of the goods and the services who bears or pays the GST. Key indirect taxes explained. Now, friends, GST. GST is tax on supply of goods and services. It has come in force from 1st July 2017. It is levied by the central and state governments. It excludes, as it stands today, alcohol and some petroleum products. So even though the GST today is applicable on all the goods and services in this country, but there are few exceptions, and the exceptions are alcohol, some of the alcohol products, and some of alcohol and some of the petroleum products. Custom duty is of course on the imports and exports, and octroi, as I mentioned, it used to be there, but currently it is abolished. Entertainment tax, again, as I said, it used to be there, but now it is subsumed into the GST. So what are the benefits and the advantages of indirect taxes? Obviously, friends, all over the globe, large number of countries, large number of geographies and economies have the GST as the tax collection system in those respective economies. In our country also, we have implemented the GST per se, we have implemented from 1st July 2016. But why have we implemented GST? And that is because it offers number of benefits and advantages. So what those benefits and the advantages are? Number one, it is a broad tax base covering many goods and services. So virtually every goods and service that you can think of is under the ambit of GST. Now, not only it is under the all the goods and services offered in this country are within the ambit of the GST, but virtually the entire population, the entire business, entire population is covered under the GST, because the GST ultimately is paid by the end user. And therefore, who are the end users? The end users are nothing but the entire population of this country. And therefore, GST offers a broad tax base, not only in terms of covering goods and services, but also in terms of covering the entire population. It is simple to collect and administer. It provides stable government revenue, encourages savings and investments. It promotes responsible consumption in case of sin taxes. So what are the sin taxes? So sin taxes is referred to a GST rate, which is 28%, which is applicable in case of products which are not supposed to be really promoting something good. So let's say, for example, the tobacco products will have a rate of 28% GST, and because they are considered as sin products. Additional merits of indirect taxes. So in addition to the advantages which are applicable in case of GST or in case of indirect taxes, there are few other merits of indirect taxes. Like, number one, major revenue source for the government, supports economic development. And when I say supports economic development, that means what? That means The revenues that would be collected by the governments through the GST will be used by the government in promoting and building of the good infrastructure in this country. Easy calculation of tax liability, because it's not a very complex way of calculating the tax as would happen in case of the direct tax. So the calculation of tax liability is very simple. You look at the product, look at the rate of a GST applicable on that product, simply multiply the rate of the GST applicable on that product to the on the value of that product which is being sold, and here you have the amount of GST liability already calculated. It is convenient payment through purchases, small amounts, so less visible burden. So unlike the tax payments, in tax payments, whether by the corporates or by the individuals, the amounts of the tax are always large. But in case of GST or the indirect taxes, the amounts are so less because it is collected from individuals, which is the entire population. And therefore, the visible burden is apparently quite less. It ensures continuous revenue flow. As we will move forward, we will understand that the GST is being collected continuously throughout the day by 24/7. From on all the transactions of the goods and services which are happening, and therefore there is a continuous flow of revenue for the government. What are the disadvantages of the indirect taxes? Of course, there are certain disadvantages also of the indirect taxes. Number one, it is regressive. Same rate for rich and poor. As we all know, whatever is the rate of GST, whether on the goods or on the services, it is same for the rich and poor. There is no differentiation. So in a way, it can be considered to be slightly regressive. It ignores ability to pay principal, which is the case in case of the income tax. So in case of GST, it does not depend as to what is the income level of the end user. It is simply charged in full on from everyone. Low civic awareness among taxpayers. So though the GST is paid by the entire population, but I'm sure if one would do a research, you would find out hardly 0.001% people would understand as to what the GST is. So the civic awareness, of course, is much lower in case of indirect taxes. Revenue estimation are uncertain. And why the revenue estimation are uncertain? And that is because you really do not know as to what is going to be the quantum of the goods that would be produced in a particular period. And you would not also know as to what would be the quantum of the services that would be provided in a particular period. And therefore, it is difficult to estimate the revenue for a particular period. But the good thing is, if you look at the history of the GST collection in this country, right from the launch of GST from 1st July 2016, the revenue collection of GST in this country have been increasing month after month, month after month, month after month, starting from something less than 1 lakh crore, and now it has also crossed 2 lakh crore. So though it would be difficult to estimate the revenue per se, but it of course today gives a very good broad idea as to how the revenue collections are going to happen for the governments. There is a possibility of tax evasion, and when I say there is a possibility of tax evasion, and that is because there are umpteen number of cases which have surfaced where people have attempted to evade the GST, not only in lakhs but crores of rupees. Most of these cases have already been caught, and they are already being prosecuted. So that possibility of tax evasion is still there. Non-issuance of bills aids evasion. So because the bills invoices to be issued only by someone who is a registered person under the GST. So someone who is not registered under the GST, he is not obliged to issue the bills. And that is what something that adds to the evasion of GST tax as such. Other taxes in India. So there is one property tax, and the property tax is levied by the municipal bodies on the residential properties and the other properties that people would own. There is stamp duty and registration fees, which is on property transactions. So when you buy or sell property, you have to pay stamp duty and registration fees, which of course is collected by the respective state governments. There are certain cesses. So there's an education cess or health cess, which is payable on tax. There is a gift tax. So when you are gifting to someone something which is in excess of 50,000 of rupees in terms of value, 50,000 rupees, you have to pay a gift tax. A gift tax, of course, is not applicable in case of relatives or when it is received by way of inheritance. So in these two cases, gift tax will not be applicable. A wealth tax was there, but it is no longer in force. It was abolished in 2015. And then, of course, as we all know, and we all keep paying it every day, there is a toll and road tax that we have to pay every day whenever we are using the infrastructure, the roads, when traveling to different locations in the country. Then, of course, there are additional cesses and taxes. So there used to be a Swachh Bharat cess of 0.5%. Now it is again subsumed into the GST. Krishi Kalyan cess also, which was supposed to be for the welfare of the farmer, is again abolished and subsumed into the GST. Infrastructure cess, which is on motor vehicles. Entry tax, as I mentioned, is on goods entering the states. Funds, and this entry tax funds support supporting development initiatives, and which strengthens the national economic growth of the country. Now, let's focus on the goods and service tax per se. So friends, as we have understood, GST is a comprehensive indirect tax system implemented in India from 1st July 2017. Just for a small correction, on some previous occasions, I have mentioned as 1st July 2016. So please read that as 1st July 2017 only. It replaced multiple central and state indirect taxes. So about 20 different taxes which were in force before 1st July 2017 in this country, collected by the center as well as the state. Now all those 20 taxes have been subsumed into the GST. That means those 20 taxes are no longer in force because they all have become part of the GST. It has brought uniformity in the taxation framework in this country. It is levied on supply of goods and services that we have understood already, and it is designed to simplify tax structure nationwide. So what are the key features of GST? So first of all, it is a multi-stage tax levied at each supply stage. What does it mean? It means the goods, when they move from the producer, from the manufacturer, the goods would pass through multiple stages. So from the goods, they would go to the distributor. From the manufacturer, they would go to the distributor. From the distributor, they will go to the wholesaler. From the wholesaler, they will go to the sub-wholesaler. From the sub-wholesaler, they will go to the retailer. From the retailer, they will go to the end consumer. So at all these stages, which are part of this supply chain, every intermediary will have to levy the GST and collect it from their respective buyer, And ultimately, the liability will fall onto the end consumer. It is destination-based tax on final consumption. Now, friends, what is the meaning of destination-based? The meaning of destination-based is that the tax liability is finally borne by the person who is the receiving the goods. That means the end liability or the liability of the GST will fall onto the person where the goods are landing. And that is what is known as destination-based tax on final consumption. It eliminates the cascading effect of taxation. Now, what does it mean? That means earlier the central sales tax or the state sales tax that we had, they were having the problem of cascading. That means every time you sell the goods to someone, you will collect sales tax, and this is how it will keep on happening. And therefore, there was a multiplicity of tax collection, and that was also known as cascading effect of taxation. That means not only you were paying tax on the goods, but you were also paying tax on the tax. and that is what is now eliminated as part of the GST. It ensures seamless tax credit flow, promotes ease of doing business. Today, if you go and talk to all the grocers or all the retailers in the market and ask them as to how do they feel after the arrival of GST, I'm sure everyone would tell you that they are very happy. And why they are very happy? Because life has really become very good, very simple for them. It establishes a unified national market that all of us have already experienced as the end consumer of the different goods and services in this country since 1st July 2016. Dual model of GST. So the GST framework that we have in this country, it is a dual model. That means it is administered by the center as well as the states. CGST, that is Central Goods and Service Tax, it is levied by the central government. State Goods and Service Tax, it is levied by the state governments. And the IGST is applicable on interstate supply. So when there are transactions happening between the buyer and seller located in two different states, and that is where IGST is applicable, and that are your interstate supplies. This dual model maintains the federal fiscal balance because the revenues are collected and they are distributed between the states and the center in a very systematic manner. Benefits and impact of GST. So now our focus is primarily on the benefits of the GST. So GST, as we all would have noticed in our experience, there is a greater transparency in tax rates. There is uniform tax structure across states. We all know input tax credit reduces the tax burden. So at this point, just to give you little idea about the input tax credit or ITC. Now, what does it mean? It means when you purchase goods, you pay GST to your supplier. And the amount of GST that you have paid to your supplier, when you sell these same goods to your customer, you will collect GST from your customer and you will pay to the government, not the entire amount that you will collect from the customer, but after deducting the amount of GST that you have paid to your supplier. And that is how this is known as input tax credit. And this input tax credit, as you can see, reduces the tax burden. Gradual reduction in the price of goods and services. It encourages formalization of economy. That means what? That means ever since the GST has come into force from 1st July 2017, there is a growing number of all the business entities in this country getting themselves registered. So before the implementation of GST, there were many businesses who were not registered with any of the tax authorities, and thereby they were not part of the formal economy of the country. Now, with the registration of virtually all of them and becoming part of the GST network, this is encouraging the formalization of the entire economy. That means every contributor is now registered with the GST, and their contribution is also known as far as the economy is concerned. So GST, of course, enhances government revenue collection because there is a good amount of formalization of economy, and that is resulting into the government's revenue collections as well. Now, how is the GST infrastructure is and how is the administration done? So the entire GST framework in this country is supported by the GST network, which is also known as GSTN portal. It is an online registration it has a facility of online registration for the taxpayers. Digital return filing system also, that means the registered persons can do the filing of the return digitally. It is simplified tax payment procedure. It is completely IT-driven compliance mechanism, and it is continuous reforms based on feedback. That means the government will keep on receiving the feedback, or the GST Council will keep on receiving the feedback from the market participants and the stakeholders, and the government and the GST and Council proactively will keep on working on those feedbacks. I'm sure, friends, a question may be coming in the minds of every one of you as to what is the genesis of GST, why the GST has been brought into existence, and what has been the history of GST in this country. So originally, it was proposed to be implemented from 1st April 2010. However, it could not happen. The government appointed an empowered committee and designed it as GST model. Joint working groups were formed, examined the joint working groups. They examined the services and the interstate taxation. The first discussion paper was released in 2009, and that was the basis for the center and state deliberations.